George Floyd laid to rest this week, but the wrong represented by his death still a long way from being righted. Is defunding the police in Minneapolis a step in the right direction? Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us each week wherever you find good podcasts. Subscribe and check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. George Floyd laid to rest this week, but of course still a great deal of fight left to be had in terms of righting the wrong his death represented. We covered this pretty thoroughly last week, just in terms of the demonstrations themselves. Anything new, Ed?
Well, I think the newest thing is this is injustice, not black. Injustice around the world. A number of white people demonstrating exceeds the number of blacks and people of color around the world, because injustice, as Kennedy said, always gets everybody. You can't be a rich person with injustice in your land. So I think people are figuring that out. And this is a worldwide change. I think it's going to rival what we've been doing with climate change. So that's why I've got that smile on my face.
We've seen Democrats unveil a new bill looking at sweeping reforms in legislation that would, among other things, prohibit racial profiling, prohibit chokehold and restraints such as the one that killed Floyd, restrict use of lethal force, and eliminate the qualified immunity defense for police and correctional officers. Thoughts on this one?
Well, those would be federal offenses. Keep that in mind. So there'd have to be something federal involved here. A hate crime, for example, would be a federal offense. Crossing a state line and the like. But I think you're going to find many states, including the South, will pass most of that legislation now because the time is right. And white mothers are thinking, that could be my kid.
Minneapolis, the city where Floyd lived and was killed, has gone a step further, voting to disband the city's police in favor of a new community-based system of public safety. Lisa Bender, the Minneapolis City Council president, said that efforts to reform the police have not been sufficient, leading to them taking this step, and it's since become a bit of a catch cry amongst protesters. Defund the police. Thoughts on this one, Ed?
Well, interesting enough, we did that in Oakland, California, when I was living there more than 30 years ago. We didn't defund the police, but the police department came to us and said, we have to have a different system of policing where the policing starts in the neighborhoods, not at City Hall. So we created, I think, it's 6 or 7 areas of the city, started with a group of people called community police, who work with the community in all kinds of economic, social development like, and pulling together social services. And until recently, I think Oakland had its first death less than 5 years ago of a policeman murdered, I believe it was on a freeway, and one on BART. But in the city itself, Oakland is the only city that has never burned.
COVID-19 cases in the US rising slightly in 22 states after we've been looking at a steady decline. Some point the finger at protests, but as you've been saying, Ed, some states weren't through their first wave yet, let alone a second wave. Latin America at the moment getting absolutely hammered by COVID as deaths rise and their economy immensely fragile. What's going on?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I want to talk a little about Russia, but first we'll talk about Brazil. In Brazil, no action's been taken at the national level, and that's what's hurt very much. There is no leadership there. Leadership is very fractured. The country's leader is now up for impeachment. The last leader was in jail, and the leader from before that had to resign. So they're leaving it to governors. In a vast country like that, it cannot be left to governors because you have people living in all kinds of circumstances. Brazil's the place where most of the people live in poverty, in favelas, as they call them, or ghettos. These are places that are unsafe to be even without COVID-19. And the people there cannot earn a living unless they're selling to the wealthier classes. The wealthier classes have closed down, gated themselves away, letting the poor die. Now, that situation is not what's happening in the United States, but it's darn close to that. The places that are opening up are the wealthiest places, and the places where poverty is pretty thick are the poorer places. And in Russia, that is really the case, that Russia is being fractured and decimated by the class structure. So Putin is in deep trouble because the class structure is about to eat him up because poor people are the ones who are dying from COVID-19.
For some good news in the States, though, the U.S. Paycheck Protection Program seems to be working after a shaky start where large companies were favored. The PPP was created with very loose restrictions. Is it doing the job of keeping the economy afloat?
Well, I think they copied us, Australia, with the Paycheck Protection Program, that has certainly helped relatives and friends of mine stay afloat. But we have a better system in that you don't have any health care cost here. And landlords have frozen their rents and in some cases reduced them. So we will have something to get started. But even in the best of circumstances, in the US, I read just yesterday, a couple of thousand retailers are just going to close. Big retailers are not going to reopen. So those jobs are lost permanently. The Paycheck Protection Program was for the small guy. Those small guys cannot replace big malls. So we're in for a long, long unemployment period.
Do we need to reframe a little bit? I mean, as you say, we're looking at sort of a long unemployment period. There's probably a fairly kind of grim outlook on certain subjects around the economy. Do we need to sort of reframe the way in which we measure economic success in the near future? I mean, certainly Donald Trump's probably going to want us to.
Well, not just Donald Trump. Remember, about 3 or 4 years ago, we were talking about what is work. Around the world, there's a whole program. I'm a member of a group in the OECD trying to define work. What will work be when basically robots can do all the manual things that need to be done? Automobiles can be driven by machines. So, what is the nature of work and how do people keep themselves sane? Now, I've had a very difficult time working from home, but I've adjusted and found ways to work in new ways, more creative, and spend more time with the family. I think we're going to find the 20-hour week maybe being the work because if you have health care, if you have basic social services, and you're free from desperation and crime, work that most people do isn't needed. So we're going to find new ways of occupying our time and identifying ourselves. The old ways of work are gone, and COVID just kicked them out the door.
The New START Accord, the last major treaty limiting US and Russian nuclear weapons and launch platforms, is set to expire next February. Now, Russia is happy to re-up with the same agreement, but the Trump administration believes that New START is too favorable to the Russian government and wants to renegotiate. If this one expires without a new agreement, all bets are off. What do you make of this one, Ed?
Well, I'm delighted to hear the Russians are willing to come back to the table here. They have a very dangerous situation, excuse me, because a lot of their nuclear weapons are not really under their control. They're in the various stands. So it's important for them to have an agreement that allows them to go into those countries, Uzbekistan and the rest, and get those nuclear weapons out. So that's a cover for them. But they also are very weak militarily now. COVID has exposed how weak their military system is. The United States is also weak militarily. The only group that's strong military are the Chinese. And the Chinese don't want a lot of nuclear weapons. So I think the United States will be under a lot of pressure to get this deal done. And Trump, from his own side, and particularly the Senate, will want this deal done. If he doesn't do this deal, he might as well get his plane ticket back to Saudi Arabia, because I think that's where he's going.
Speaking of nuclear nasties, North Korea has severed ties with the South after North Korean defectors flew balloons carrying leaflets and SD cards over the border, presumably with info about the outside world. Some experts believe Kim Jong-un is using the leaflets to manufacture a crisis and a sense of urgency going forward. Any thoughts?
Is he alive? Have you seen him? Who's running the place? I'm not sure. I this is one where I just don't even want to speculate on what's going on. The severing of ties could be internal strife among the various armies and the like, and creating a notion of national unity while they actually internally tear the place apart. Something tells me this isn't right. The only place they have any hope is coming from the South.
And across the pond, Prince Andrew, close personal friend of dead paedophile Jeffrey Epstein, has refused to cooperate with US law enforcement on the Epstein case, forcing authorities to up the ante, essentially. What's going on?
Well, he's in the soup, and he's a royal. I think the royals want to figure out that how they can get some distance from him, but then let him hang on his own. There'll be some deal made where he testifies but doesn't face any severe penalties other than disbandment from the royal family. But he's a weak man. He will testify. The screws are on, and nobody in England really wants to protect him.
And keeping our eyes on the 2020 race, a lot of polls favouring Biden over Trump, which I absolutely could give a damn about, in all honesty. I don't think I'll ever care what a poll from any outlet has to say again about election results. As far as I'm concerned, the presidential race is still up in the air, but Democrats taking the Senate. This is being talked about more and more as a real possibility. But how real is it, and what do they need to do to go about it, Ed?
Well, they have to keep all the seats they have, and none of them are in serious jeopardy, but you never, never know. Then they have to win some seats that they can win. Arizona, for example, where McSally ran and lost, and now she's been appointed, and she has not done very well. So Arizona could go, and there's a large Hispanic vote there. Colorado, Hickenlooper will be running. A very, very highly esteemed governor and a very popular man running against the Republican incumbent there. That's two. It looks like Maine is a really up for grabs. Susan Collins can't find a place where she can find real solace. That's three. We only need one more. And there's a good chance. Now, if Jones keeps his job in Alabama, there could be one more coming from the upper Midwest or the center of the country. So watch this space. But do you really need a Democratic victory in the Senate? Because Minkowski is definitely moving in that direction. It looks like several other Republican senators have seen the light and want to distance themselves from Trump. So I think there might be four or five senators on the Republican side who flip this time, because there'll be no Trump to lead them.
Ed and I will be back next week to talk the latest in U.S. news and politics. Subscribe wherever you find the podcast and check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.